special staff.
Currently at University of Richmond making a transition.
Yeah, always fun.
Yeah. With that, I think we'll get right into our presentation here as well.
We'll get the traditional and the PowerPoint out of the way first. But what are blogs? And feel free to shout out stuff if you really are anxious to answer that question. But if you're not, if you're shy like most people with presentation audiences, basically cat diaries. Another description. Blogs are simply online diaries, a place to spout off about your uninformed political views. They're a mechanism to write about controversial subjects that will risk ruining your academic/professional career. And they're also an excellent place to talk about your cats. Okay. That question is something that we hope to answer today. We're going to talk a little bit about WordPress, but we're going to try to answer these questions in this presentation. So we'll begin with two basic questions. First, why WordPress? WordPress is that flexible web publishing system that we've all been looking for, or at least that's what we feel or we'll try to demonstrate to you today. It's capable of displaying up-to-the-minute, fresh content in lots of different ways, and you can theme it in all different styles and that sort of thing. So we're really impressed with the way you can kind of just turn this into a traditional website. WPMU, WordPress multi-user. Okay, what exactly is WordPress multi-user and why WordPress multi-user? WordPress multi-user is just that. It's the availability of blogs in one central location. You can sign up for one or 10 or 100 different blogs and set them up in all different ways. And our kind of idea is that we can connect these and build a community out of WordPress multi-user. Creating a new blog is as simple as typing in your username and password and say, create new blog. And then you can name it, give its own subdomain, and you're off and running. The same power behind the cat diary is the power to build these dynamic, interactive websites that function on many levels to build that community at your university or college. So with that, I will turn it over to Jim Green.
Great. So my question that I'll introduce to you briefly is why, let me go here, and there's our little site. This is a resource site we'll be referring back to, care of Rene Magritte. But three questions I'm going to ask you. Why WordPress multi-user for instructional support? Why use it in an academic setting? And I'm going to just give you three quick examples now, and then I'll go back and expand on it. First is, this is UMW blogs, right? WordPress multi-user, through the beautiful reality of RSS, gives us the possibility to, in one place, centrally aggregate what's happening in all these different classes in one space. So, not only do we have, and I'll move that to my next point, students have their own space to publish, which is extremely important that they have their own unique space. Here's a great example. This is a student's blog, and he's from art. He's using it as a blog for his different classes, but you'll see here he's also using it as a portfolio to show the paintings, the sculptures, the drawings that he's doing throughout his career. Why is this important? Well, not only can we share work from all these different classes, but a student can have their individual space that they make their own aesthetically, and in fact, it is their space. They control it, and then they can ultimately export it when they go and take it with them. Something that's hard to do with the current state of learning management systems we have right now. So two points. We have a place to share work across disciplines in one central space. We have individual spaces for students, and the most important part, we have the ability for students to create spaces, to get creative with this application. It's easy enough for them to use. Here's an example of an online literary journal created by a group of 5 students using WordPress. This is not a blog, right? This is actually a journal they created. One of the beauties of WordPress is that it's working on an open source community that allows you to do all sorts of amazing things with media. Let me take this for example, and this is just one example. I'll find it. Well, there are many, but I really like this guy's art, so I want to feature it. Let's try this one, Joel Bergner. If I go to his work, and this is obviously how it's set up, we have a bio page in WordPress, and then we have a series of his art. If I click on it, right?
They've created a dynamic kind of gallery using WordPress. None of these students can code at all. It's the beauty of the space. We've created a flexible publishing platform for them to actually not only build on the work they're doing throughout their course of study, but also to create new things that they can bring with them and have a portfolio online. So that's how we're using it, and that's how we're thinking about it for instruction. And I'll go into this in more detail in just a little bit.
And I wanted to talk just for a minute about, well, what does this mean for the enterprise, right? The advantage of WordPress multi-user is that in the background, it's always using, instead of separate databases for every blog, it's using one common database. And there's also administrative tools that are set up that help you take care of the site and administer everything that's happening there. But the other thing that's really kind of nice about doing it this way is that it gives you a lot of flexibility as far as RSS, being able to, for those of you who might not be familiar with what RSS is, it's feeds. It's how do I get information from one blog and maybe gather all those pieces together without me having to go out and look and look and look and see if new stuff's there. It's kind of a method that pushes information to people that want. Okay, so you can get a feed. Having all these separate feeds and the ability to take them all and mash them up together in different ways, or take them all into a common space. Let's say an instructor is teaching a class on economics, and part of that is that he may want to have some of his students blog about a research project they're doing over the course of the semester. The individual students can set up their own blog where they're going to work inside that space, but then we also have a way that we can bring all of those feeds into one central space and have kind of a course space that shows, here's what all of my colleagues in the class are doing as well, so they can have a way to kind of go there and see what's going on. But this is this particular system is a thing that can expand to meet all the demands of the enterprise. Some already running versions of WordPress multi-user that you may or may not be familiar with are WordPress.com, which is, you go there and you can sign up for your own blog there, or EduBlogs is another thing that is being used, and that's kind of focused on the education part. So, that being said, I think we're going to go into Andy, and he's going to show you a little demo of how we can use WordPress to create, just basically do some online publishing. It's not necessarily just blogs, all kinds of things.
So the idea behind this next blog, it's called Great Lives. It's part of the History Department's program or series that they have each year, where we have both Mary Washington professors and outside speakers come in and talk about a historical figure. So the Great Lives series kind of captures those videos, those presentations, and puts them online. So what we have is kind of an embedded video that we can start to play here. If it doesn't play because of network access, whatever, we'll deal. But just a basic introduction, and then you'll see a video of Professor Robert Barr talking about Fidel Castro. These are the 2007s and 2008s.
He is already one of the most popular professors we have here.
Okay, I'd love to listen to the whole presentation, but you kind of get the idea. What we've got here, again, is it's blog software, but it's a web page. You know, it has the advantages of the blog, and I'll talk a little bit about what specifically those advantages are. But this is a website that we can have available for this particular series. And we try to make it integrate with our Mary Washington pages. So if I click on the tab at the top, it will go to the Great Lives page at Mary Washington about the lecture, where we can see the archives. There's a comments and questions area. Within our Great Lives site, we can have just a simple about page that talks about how to use the site. You need to have the Flash player installed, etc. So it's kind of a site that's designed to guide people towards getting the resources they want to see. As I say, we'll have the 2008 videos up. They wanted to keep those hidden, and that's another good kind of part of this demonstration is that you can privatize pages if you want to. You can keep them hidden until they're ready to go. And then you just go into the back end and you're gonna activate those pages. But for right now, we just have the 2007s and I'm a little behind in digitizing and getting those up, but they didn't come to me until recently. So that's my excuse anyway. So let's talk a little bit about the back end and what we can do with this. The idea is that when you go to the home page, the latest video is featured at the top of the page. Now I'm logged in, so you can see these private videos. Okay? And I'll actually demonstrate how we put one of these videos embed them into the post. But these are essentially blog posts, if you will, that show the latest video. So we've got videos on Genghis Khan, and Douglas MacArthur is actually a 2008 series video. So these will be intermixed. And again, the idea behind the blog and the RSS is that they don't have to keep going to this site to see if there's a new video. They can be notified in Google Reader or Blog Lines or whatever they use to gather their RSS that there's a new video available to see and it's been posted. So they can click on these when that happens. Also the idea, and maybe Great Lives 2.0 might be that we have the iPod versions or just an MP3 version of the talk that people can subscribe to as well. Okay, so that's the basic idea behind this. Now videos are pretty easily added once they're produced. I use Adobe Premiere to take the raw video, to put bumpers on either end, to modify the audio if it needs to, and then I just produce them as Flash video, FLV files. And then those FLV files, once they're produced, automatically get uploaded via FTP to the website space, and it's just go from there, point to the site. So what I'm going to do is show you how you actually embed this. So this is the URL to the video. I'm just going to copy that real quick, and then I'll edit this post. Show you a little bit of the back end. Got a little bit of a musical background. And I'm going to just actually delete this out. And I'm going to click on this media button. And it just says paste the URL of the video here. I click on OK. I'm going to just delete that little extra title tag at the end. Publish that.
And is that media
video there? It is a plugin that we by default have installed in the WordPress multi-user install. So it's just there for anybody to use as long as they, you know, activate that plugin in their installation. And that's done on a user by user basis. So if they don't want to have that, they won't see that button there until they activate that plugin. I'm sorry? It's the Anarchy player. I think it's listed as AMP or something like that. Okay. We also have the PodPress plugin available. We've had, I won't say a lot of difficulty, but we've had just enough difficulty that people have found the Anarchy player to be just a little bit easier to use. But PodPress, I think, updates on a daily basis. So they're probably up to version 15, and a couple weeks ago they were up to version 8, so you know, who knows.
Are these open source or these licensed?
These are all open source, yeah. Yeah. So now we have our lecture on Genghis Khan available for the general public. And again, it's the files we used to, in a previous version of this, we used the real media, and you might snicker and laugh, and I snickered and laughed a little bit, but it really, it did produce very small files.
Please join me in welcoming to our podium.
And the files were good quality, but Flash is just ubiquitous now, and the Flash player is really on everybody's machine. You have to have the latest, you know, either Flash 8 or Flash 9 to see these FLVs, but you know, it's good quality, and you're talking about 140 megabytes worth of information, because these are usually hour and 15 minute lectures, so they're pretty large. But even with the buffering, they'll play on a decent broadband connection at a pretty high speed, so you don't have to worry too much about that. So the videos are really easily added. Again, there's an RSS feed that allows you to be notified when these posts are available. I talked a little bit about the privacy features, and again, you saw those were, some of those posts were marked private, and you can only see those if you're logged in. This would be a good way if you've got a class that You've got users that you only want them to see things, and you want to keep the outside, the general public out. You've got privacy abilities to control that. If I manage some of these posts, you'll see some of these are marked as private. So if I go and edit, like Douglas MacArthur, I can go in and turn off that privacy button off, okay, or just click on publish, and that should take care of that and make that one active. So now when we view the site, the Douglas MacArthur site will be there whether you're logged in or not. We can make this whole site private if we want to. We can have this whole site locked down so that they have to have a login just to see the site. And I'll show you how that can be done. Just back up here and go to the options page. Privacy. And basically what we can do is just say, I'd like this blog only to be visible to administrators or registered users, whichever one you want. Click on update options. View the site. Actually, let me stop that for a second. Let me sign out. Okay, so that's what you see if the site's locked down. There's a little simple login button, and if you have a login, you can get into the site. Otherwise, you don't get to see any of the content.
How does that work
with RSS? That's a good question. I'm not sure what gets through if it's logged down. So that might be that capability might be taken away from you.
It is.
Okay. Jim is a real good person to answer that.
Which is kind of the logic, which that means you don't want to share it.
So just curiosity.
Okay. But again, you can have extra other pages that are created for support or other instructions, you know, static pages. On the sidebar, you can have different ways to categorize the videos. You've got the latest videos that are there. I can show just the 2008 videos only. I can click on the archives. The only problem with the archives is it actually lists when they are posted, not necessarily when the videos took place. But you can have other links that are available to go to other sites. So really, this is just kind of a standard website to display the videos as they're listed there. And if you want to view this site at any time and see what's available, just go to greatlives.umwblogs.org. And you'll see what's available there. But again, that's just one example of kind of my use for media presentation with videos. Yeah?
A few questions.
Uh-huh.
So as an administrator of the site, do you buy multiple themes that people will build their own blogs, blog pages to use?
Yeah, there's multiple themes available, and they just pick the one that they want to associate with their blog, and it's only for their blog.
But the themes that you've made available to them, they wouldn't have.
Right. If they find their own out on WordPress.com/themes or whatever, they won't be able to use those. They can certainly contact us and say, I'd like to use this. And if it's WordPress multi-user compatible, we'll get to it as soon as we can.
Plug into one of the things they need.
Exactly.
You need to add them. You need to make them available.
Yeah. Let me just see if I can get to the. And maybe I don't want to step on anybody else's toes, but Jim, somebody might probably show you, or if we have time later, just the listing of plugins that we have available to our installation.
One of the first things I noticed, you're using a .org URL instead of a
UNW URL. Mm-hmm. What was
that?
We're in a pilot.
Yeah.
So part of the getting it up and running quickly, we have this not hosted on our campus. We have a hosting service that's running this for us. We started it this fall, opened it up mainly focusing on our freshman seminar students and faculty. And in that time, we're up to 1,100 blogs, about 1,100, about 1,000 users. So yeah, so
we have 3,000 too.
So I think that we're kind of scrambling this summer to try and do what it's going to take this out of pilot and just make it an enterprise. So,
how big is your database?
I don't know the answer to that.
It's not that big actually. I think it's about 300 megs.
Mm-hmm. It's much bigger.
Yeah, well that's the error log. The airlines like
What do you think? Patrick's our colleague as well. He's been doing some administration.
I'm pretty sure it was implemented hard to have a max when I was trying to download. I don't remember what it was, but.
But a couple of gigs, something like that.
Yeah, it was long enough that I gave up on the
job. Now, WordPress.com and EduBlogs and all those kind of those service providers are hosting tens of thousands and thousands of blogs on the same system. So there's also consulting and that kind of thing available out there if you start to really scale it out that far, that you can contract with, you know, James Farmer's Group, which is
On the first question, do I remember right that there was a question about whether we could use REDU when the server is not something that's under our control? Is that not?
It's a matter of the DNS adjustments that have to be made if you're hosting it. So for the external hosted pilot, it wasn't worth it. But we may be looking at, I'm not in their department, I'm just kind of.
You help.
That's exciting.
She helps them.
She's their office space.
But for the next pilot of WordPress multi-user, we're going to try to do our technology documentation using WordPress multi-user. Because there's a variation of preferences and abilities in our technology staff regarding web authoring. So we've been using Macromedia Activity up until now, and we haven't gotten really good buy-in on that. Not to mention it's a client thing, and tech people don't like to be given easy applications. So, since this is a web front end, we're hoping that the buy-in on documentation will be quicker, and they'll be more likely to update the documentation. And WordPress has a good way of showing you what the latest stuff is and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to be our next project, and that will certainly push the envelope on the .edu thing, because I think from the point of view of not having enough staff to take care of all these servers locally, we're really looking at more and more of these systems being hosted on the site.
And Jim is going to cover probably a lot of this in his next piece here, when he's going to show some demonstrations.
Well, yeah, I actually was not going to cover the external hosting. I was actually going to look at how this was actually working in the environment. And so here's that's a kind of attractive site, but I'm going to come back to it in a second. So look at that. See that? It really wants it. I'm going to come right here, and I'm going to get rolling, and it looks like I have a lot to present, but I really don't. Okay, so let me talk about WordPress, a little bit of history and actual courses. This is a course that's not on WordPress multi-user. It's on a single WordPress blog, Poetic Sequence, taught by Mara Scanlon and Claudia Emerson. And this is a unique class, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit, because this one single WordPress installation was dealing with a directed study for 18 different students who only saw each other 3 times during the semester. So what they did is they shared a group blog. They blogged about the actual poetry they were reading together. They would meet 3 times during the semester only, and this is where they were actually tracking all their work. Well, as you see, not only is it a blog where people can interact around ideas and each other's postings, which is all on one shared blog, but it has the course description, the schedule, and these are all just static pages. What this is doing is it's kind of emulating a very simple learning management system with these stable kind of static web pages, but also having this dynamic space here. What we did beyond that is we created another space called Student Projects, where students would be able to publish the work they did at the end of this directed study. So, and for many ways, in my own thinking, and I stress my own thinking because it's often not everybody's, is that this is Student Projects here. We had their own little page coming off one single WordPress blog, which would feature their work. Well, the logical extension of this model is, why not everybody have their own blog? Be doing their work in that space, and through the beauties of RSS, pull it into one central aggregated course blog. The genius of this is that students are actually working within their own space and can feed it out easily. They have a portfolio or their own kind of chat book or their own kind of feed book, however you want to call it, that they can take with them when they go. So hence, move forward to about 4 months later, Gardner Campbell and I embarked
on the beauty that is UMW blogs. In that, I'm sorry, but in that, the fact that we have a sense of a single portal space that's .org, and in fact, I forget that it's .org versus .edu. It almost seems insignificant to me, although that may not be the case, and that could be something to talk about. But you see I have a historic preservation class coming in, a Theater 435, a freshman seminar on Spanish. I get a quick snapshot of the mind of the university, right? Of different people who are publishing to their blog. And this is a student's blog, right? This is a professor's blog. You know, this is actually a kind of group blog. So depending on where it's coming in from, you get a different snapshot. So UMW Blogs is actually providing that very space we didn't have in that poetic sequence class, right? It's providing the space to have your own kind of course space that's an aggregated blog. This is Gardner Campbell's Rock Song Progressive for this spring. I mean, you gotta love the nose. Right? If you can put Pete Townsend's nose in your header, things are pretty good on campus. So we have this actual blog space, and as you can see, these are posts from students. They're using those crazy resources like reloaded. Those crazy resources like YouTube. Right? Which for a class like Rock, Soul, and Progressive is like essential. They can, as Andy already showed you, quickly embed them in their blogs. And we have it running so that when it pulls in to Gardner's class aggregator blog, the video still exists. You can see it. So if I were to follow this link back, because it says original post by Corey Cox or C. Cox, I don't know if it's Corey Cox. I probably do because I read them so much. But if I go back to this blog, I'll actually see this student's work, her own space, or his own space, where they're doing their work. So we have the RSS feeds from all these different blogs being pulled in, and we have the student who obviously has their own feed, who has their own space. This is where they do their work. Who needs an e-portfolio? I mean, that's so 2003. Okay, so let's actually get... And what I love about this is every professor and every student has the ability, with 90-some-odd themes available to them, and if you have more, you can get more, they have the ability to kind of create their own unique space. So this is another course blog. As you see, it has a bunch of resources like the essays, syllabus, prompts that the professor would do and learn in something like Blackboard. Well, they can do it just as easily here in terms of the authoring that Kathy already mentioned, how quickly it is. There's no obstacle to getting involved, or very little. And more than that, we have another space where students are sharing. Now, I'm going to use a quick example here. And do I have audio on this, Andy, before I get going?
You should.
Okay. So here's my quick example. This is the featured blog, which is actually a blog I started as kind of a joke to go around and look at work going on in this community and feature it. Right? There's nothing better when you're actually doing this work to have someone blog about you and say, oh, that's cool. Right? So we did a fun featured blog. The Empire is searching for you. You gotta make it fun. And then you gotta know a little stormtrooper. That's great. You know, it took me about 2 seconds to create this site. Well, one blog post that really excited me was this one where a student had gone out onto YouTube and via the Internet Archive is where this video originally was posted. She found, they were talking about Japanese internment in an internment camp, and she found this video from the US government, which was talking about, it's actually a propaganda video about internment. So she brought it into the discussion of the class, and the class got excited. They commented a lot about the actual blog post and what it means and how this reflects to the novel they were reading. So what we start to immediately see is that these resources that before would be extremely cumbersome to bring into your class are as simple as copying and pasting a link, as Andy showed. Which is remarkable. Now, let's take that to the next level. So, we have this on there, and there's a man speaking. And maybe I should play it a little bit more so you can get context.
So, in the Japanese relocation, we have the introduction to it, and then there'll be a man at a desk, and he'll be speaking. The American government moved the Japanese because it was safe for them, you know, and then he goes in, and it's a very soothing, relaxing kind of moment in propaganda.
So,
which is the best kind, right? You don't want propaganda to scare you. That's where we are now. So here he is. He's very reassuring, like all 50s men are. And it's nice. Okay, so let's fast forward. This goes on. He talks. Let's go to the audio. Because another student saw this, got inspired, and that always happens.
Jesus, that's right.
And they... But when you see that, you start to see that this media and the way in which students are using not only to share resources then becomes a process of remixing and reimagining those resources for the very class that they're doing it. And when we talk about this as a publishing platform, that's what it's about. There are so many great pieces that are freely available now that we can easily bring in and share. And the sharing and openness in some ways is key to this. Because students, not only within a class, but between classes, can start to see how this works and can start to see what's going on in different classes and get a sense of what's happening in this community at large. UMW Blogs is not about WordPress or WordPress multi-user or blogging. It's about a community space for learning and a distributed space that traces the process of an education over time. It's really a conceptual model that puts LMSs, in my mind, in the state of complete irrelevance? I really think they are irrelevant. We're in a world at this moment where people are already doing the searching. They're already finding this stuff. They already know it's available. Give them a model that works. Give them a model where they can take their stuff with them freely, and then they can do it. They can protect what they have to, but they can share when they need to. It's important. Okay, so there's my Japanese. Jerry, cut me off at any time, please.
You got 5 minutes.
5 minutes, great. Okay, so I'm gonna look at a couple examples. Here's a Band of Dangerous art blog. Follows the same model, right? But it looks good. She's got a rotating header with all the different art pieces here. In fact, the site, the aesthetic of the site becomes part of the display and imagination of the course. When she wanted to change the header images, the students got angry because they were invested in that site. They liked it. And why did they like it? Because it was a place where they came to both share and to comment and to actually get, it became something that was part of them, at least for the course of that semester. Language learning. I mean, where do we begin or end with language learning and resources like YouTube, right? I mean, language departments spend a lot of money on like satellite TV and stuff like that. YouTube, this Italian professor is using YouTube as a space not only for students to kind of find YouTube videos in this language, but also using tools freely available online to subtitle. Right? So to do translation, what to take English YouTube videos and then translate them into another language. I mean, the tools are there and they cost us nothing. It's the genius of it. Okay, talked about this, and this is kind of piggyback a little bit on what Andy did. James Farmer, the famous civil rights leader, our class actually said, we don't want to create a blog, we want to create an archive. We want to create a resource of all the James Farmer stuff we have in our archive. And so what they did is they started to create a site where they were sharing a lot of the stuff that we have about James Archive, but is not freely James Farmer, but is not freely available. Well, here's one example of a lecture that James Farmer gave in the 80s at Mary Washington. It's sitting in the archive. Well, following Andy's model, why can't we digitize that stuff and make it available? Well, they've done that with a series of 13 lectures. And I said it before, I'll say it again, who needs a TV station when you start to have a publishing platform like this, where you can share this stuff so easily? I mean, you start to get away from the notion of thinking in terms of different media. The media is there. We have the platform to do it, and it should be invisible, right? I spoke about it before. This is an example of a student portfolio site, right? This is that student's site. They can take whatever they want through their RSS feed and send it to another course blog. But this is their space, this is what they take with them when they go. Also, Here's another example of a student space, right? And here's a cool project, and I might end here. This is work running on umwblogs.org, but this is not a blog at all. The professor, one of my favorite professors, in the fact that she's like, I'm tired of you and all your bloggity blog 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 talk, right? I mean, she's like a real person. She's like, leave me alone with the blog. So I had to go to her and say, you know, it's not a blog, really. It's going to be your own social site for sharing audio. And so what we did is we just got rid of all the kind of upfront blogginess. We made it a very classic-looking site. And what it is it's actually a space where you can share audio from 18th century. Is that clear enough from the title, or should I? But let me find an example of how this works. Anyone see William Blake?
Fourth one?
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go to London because it's my favorite. So
we have this. We have a series of author lists, which are just pages. And if I go to the author list, you'll see the title of William Blake, which will show up in a second. And underneath this will be a list of all the posts that are actually posts, blog posts, that are dealing with Blake. This is done through RSS. So you can just put that page in and have a little RSS aggregator pull everything in that's categorized as Blake. So now we have it. They don't have to actually do anything to these pages. They automatically update with the RSS. So say I want to hear Blake's London. I just click here. It will take me to a post, which is the blog part, but you never see it until you follow through the pages. And when we get to that post, we'll see that it will have the title, a download link, and I'm going to talk about the source for a second, a space to actually vote on it. Is this a good reading? Is it a bad reading? And a space to comment, right? What I really like about this is there was no uploading involved. Many of these poems are available freely through a source called LibriVox. And with the Anarchy Media Player, which we already displayed, you can copy that link and paste it in to the Anarchy Media Player, and it shows up just like that. So if they want to hear this, they can just... I'm going to do the same thing. Yeah, here it goes. Okay, they can just hit that, and Blake will start playing. What's more is students are now part of this class. Is they're recording poems that aren't available on LibriVox, and they're uploading. So they're giving back to this open archive of the public.
London by William Blake.
And so
for LibriVox,
what we have here is a social site that's kind of centered around audio.
I wander through each chartered street, near where the chartered Thames does...
And the professor bought it and finally listened to me because it didn't actually take much kind of programming or rethinking all this. It was actually a site that we could reconceptualize with something like WordPress to make it more like a social site and something that worked for her. And what's more than that is it's a resource now. If you're looking for 18th century audio, this is a site you might come across, right? And this is a valuable resource. So thinking about UMW blogs is not just thinking about the notion of a blog. It's thinking about how you create an educational community that can kind of be driven through the publishing, right? Publishing the work they're doing. This work is valuable. How do we make it available? How do we make it open? And I think that, to me, is really the driving force behind all of this. I mean, we have centennial images on a blog. Professors could have their own space. Here's a professor blog, etc. I mean, it's really, if you can think of it, it could probably be done. And that's the expendability or the flexibility of this.
A couple of questions. Back on the 18th century poetry page, The William Blake page, is that a static page that links that to be manually added, or is that just being done by tags and going to an aggregator and spilling that automatically?
Yeah, she's just pulling through those RSS feeds on those main pages.
Yeah, so you're just tagging them?
Pulling in categories Blake, and they will all show up on that page, and then you link to it, and that's the post you categorize as Blake. So it's really simple.
I noticed your top page and a number of the student pages have links to a wiki.
We don't have a wiki farm. We use MediaWiki, but we don't have a MediaWiki farm, which would actually provision different wikis. So no, we don't. That's not something we've kind of. If anyone has done that successfully,
but the things you want, have it all be there, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, Patrick.
Can I be a stinker?
Sure.
And ask this question. If I wrote a blog post about my cat, and my cat's name is Blake, is stuff about my cat going to show up there?
Well, no, because you're doing it on this page. You're doing it on this, unless you wanted to do it on the 18th century audio site, but Professor McAllister wouldn't like it if you did that.
So she's reading her own RSS feed. She's not aggregating from outside sources.
No, this is a student-created site. They're going in there and creating the author. This is not them bringing in the work they're doing for the class.
Okay, so there's actually not a resource.
Well, I mean, the site itself has RSS, but this isn't following the kind of course aggregation logic.
Okay.
This is following the logic of, this is actually an 18th century audio site that her and her class are creating as a resource. And so as you can see in the pages here, they have a whole different bunch of authors that they're kind of populating with the audio that's freely available online. So this wouldn't be a space where they actually talk about what they're doing in class. They could do that in their own blog, but they wouldn't pull it in.
But so when you say that page of William Blake's,
yeah,
that is, how is that page being
through Agra, through a plugin.
So it is aggregating.
It's aggregating posts on within this blog.
Okay.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Any other questions? I know I might move quickly through that. Kathy.
Okay. I was wondering, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud, it would be possible, I mean, looking at this and the band art and this other stuff, that if we had some kind of tagging system that associated with a library taxonomy,
yeah,
that this kind of stuff could pull in.
Maybe. But I think that's a tool that's much better done with something like Drupal. I don't think you'd really. I don't think you'd want to actually try and reinvent WordPress to do something else.
What WordPress
does well is it gives people their individual spaces to publish what they're doing and take it with them.
Right.
And that could feed through a very kind of basic RSS feed into core sites and do that well. But if you kind of rebuild the taxonomy and start to get into the semantic web, you're probably better off with a tool. I mean, a tool that would do that. Because I don't think WordPress multi-user is kind of suited to do that. And I think to reimagine it, maybe it will be in the future, to reimagine it that way now, I think it would be a lot more work for very little results.
So, using
but maybe that's going to be part of the enterprise mission. So.
Well, what? Where's the? What I wanted to talk with you just briefly, and
if you guys want to come to the page that we're doing all this from, it's just called notablog.umwblogs.org. Not a blog, all one word.
You'll find here the outline of our presentation and then links to a lot of what we've shown you today. So you can come back and check this out when you may have a little more time to look and browse. But down here at the bottom, I just wanted to talk about a little bit of the enterprise concerns and challenges and things that, you know, we see ourselves running up against with a hugely successful pilot. So the first one is, of course, the policy development, right? So what are going to be our terms of service? What do we think is good kind of behaviors to have in this space and all those kind of things? Well, as it turns out, you know, this is not much different than any of the other things we're already doing and already have policy for. So we're not in a position where we have to rewrite a policy just because of a different way we're delivering. Right? So we already have some standards that we expect our students and staff faculty to adhere to, so there's not much there. The other big parts of something like this is, you know, what's your support policies going to be? How are you going to approach that, which is not just policy, it's also every day making this thing work on your campuses. Well, for the group, in our department is really the folks that anytime there's questions about UMW blogs, those all come to us. The calls are very minimal. We've built a FAQ page and some help. There's some help videos that are available there that have really allowed a lot of the users to kind of figure a lot of this out on themselves. And to be honest with you, the usage problems that we see are not with the students. I mean, if they can figure out Facebook, they can figure out WordPress, right? So, and they do. They'll sit there and they'll figure out how to use this kind of thing. The faculty and the staff are the ones that we have to work a little more with to get them comfortable with, but it's just web pages. And if they've used Blackboard,
It's just filling out the forms and getting to the different pages, just like you have to know Blackboard, right? You have to know where you want to go inside of Blackboard to do certain things. It's the same thing here. So it's not really a huge leap for them. The leap is in the way it changes the thinking about what they can possibly do, the different ways you can apply it to like this. It's very different than what they're thinking about, oh, with Blackboard, I can do a discussion board, right? I mean, we're kind of a little beyond that here. So it kind of really starts to, in some cases, blow their minds about what they're about to do. And sometimes that's not good because they're like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. But, you know, we've been taking it little small steps at a time. And I think that with those folks, it's working pretty well. Intellectual property and privacy issues, things like that. You saw inside the blog, everybody has control of their own privacy when it happens to that blog. Okay? The other thing that we have to, I think, do a little more work on is making sure that people understand very well what those settings do, so that when they're doing something here, they understand what the implications might be later. This is not just for embedded blogs. This is for all the things our students do, right? I mean, when they're on Facebook and things like that, I don't think they all totally understand what they mean when they say they're going to put all this information out there, and that it might be out there a long time, even when they want to pull it back. Okay? So that's an education piece that we have to do, regardless of what we do, what system we're using for this. So that's another piece that we're working on as well. And we tried to approach it with, we did it with all our freshmen this last year. We did an orientation piece where we just kind of had a show and gave away a lead. But the whole kind of theme of the show was, you're on a big stage now. Think about what you're doing. That was basic message I really looked at. And it was pretty successful for our freshman orientation. So the other part about this is there's some links that I put in here to give you some information about hardware, software, and application support, different communities, different groups that are out there. There's the WordPress multi-user support pages themselves, which are hosted by the group that's actually building this. There's also some other groups out there. The EduBlogs group, which is a private group that's now providing a service, which is called EduBlogs Campus, where you can subscribe and have them handle all this back-end stuff for you. And they'll even get your EDU domain on it and all that kind of thing. So they do that kind of thing. And for their unlimited package is like around $7,000 a year. And that gives you as many blogs as you guys want. And they do all the backups, they do all that kind of stuff. They'll work with you as far as what plugins and things like that they're comfortable with and you're comfortable with. We're looking at the possibility of using them for our system. You know, we want to make sure that we can still do the wacky things every now and then, which sometimes, you know, somebody that's tasked with keeping your system up and running is not always so comfortable with, so we're trying to figure out how we can do both of those things.
Who is your host?
What's that?
Who is your host?
Right now we're with Cast Iron Coding, but that, they're not doing this for other people. It was a kind of an agreement that it was a friends of Jim's, but they wanted to try and see what it would be like to host this kind of system. We wanted to do a pilot, kind of met in the middle, and it's been very successful. But they've kind of decided that they don't want to host this kind of stuff. So so right now we've come to an agreement to get us through the end of the semester, but we're looking at what our alternatives might be to finish this out. So I'm going to stop there because I wanted to leave the last few minutes here for conversation. You can always come back and check our stuff out here, but what do you all think of this? And do you have anything you'd like to ask us? Yeah?
Question. How do you handle user accounts? Have you pulled this into your Enterprise LDAP system or anything else, or you just let people register their own accounts when they're ready, and how would you restrict that to just...
We have it set up that the way you get in is you have to have a UMW email address. So you fill out that, and then you're in. Once you have an account...
So verify, send an email to that address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so once they're in and you have an account, you can build as many blogs on top of that as you like. So, we have some users that have 10 or 15 of them, and they're using different ones.
Right. And the owner of the blog could add you to the blog.
Yeah, the owner of the blog has total control. So if you're in the, if you have an account, and this is what, you know, some faculty are doing, if they already have students that are in the system, they just create a blog for class, they have them add their email address to a list, and now you have all the students in your class. Manual process, not like, you know, what you do behind the scenes with some of the, you know, some back-end stuff that works practical as far as provisioning. Yes.
Did you mention the data is portable? Like, say a student graduates and they want to continue their blog after they graduate?
They can export their blog.
Okay.
And that's a, I mean, it's really as easy as every student can actually download their database or export their blog. And it would be as easy as going into the site admin in the manage tab in their back end. Everybody who has their own blog has that option. So they click on Manage, Export, and to say they have an existing blog on another service, they can actually import it too. So say someone wants to use your university service for the moment, well, they can actually take it, import it, and when they want to leave, they can export it back out. So that's the, I mean, it's not entirely clean XML. They promise we'll create an XML file. It's a very specific WordPress XML that has some oddities, but in the end, it's a lot more portable than most other formats you get.
They'd also need to move all the media that's associated with it separately.
Yeah, and that's why we're pushing things like Flickr and YouTube and stuff, is because when you use images in a Flickr account or YouTube in a video account, a video in a YouTube account, those URLs will follow you cleanly. So no matter where you move your blog in your kind of, you know, peripatetic peregrinations throughout school and life, those things will still remain with you.
Like when you have the video files, are those hosted on your general university servers?
Before the UMW blogs kind of experiment, our experiment was to have individual, Bluehost is the company that did the web hosting. Okay. So each of us have our own Bluehost. So right now, those videos that you saw for Great Lives are being hosted on my instantiation of the Bluehost account. So we've got, you know, I don't know what it is at this point, 1.5 terabytes worth of space to put these videos up, and there's, you know, a terabyte worth of bandwidth or whatever for $8 a month. So it's a great way to go. There's no real lag in terms of the video that you saw. I don't know, it seemed to work better than some of the YouTube stuff. I don't know if that's just the variations that we had. But yeah, we've got, you know, essentially unlimited space for that. And obviously, we need to start thinking about archiving and having repositories for this kind of stuff, and we are. And that might change where we host those videos. But for now, it works well.
I wonder if we don't put the archiving on the students. I mean, that's the whole logic, is as they move into their digital age, we don't archive their papers for them. Why should we archive their blog posts? I mean, like, the notion of archiving their work online seems pretty arcane, given the fact that this is their, you know, digital life that they're maintaining through this 4 years here. And so why not provide them a framework in which, whether it's here or on some other service, that they can be a part of a community without us have to worry about building this kind of overly expensive and often redundant infrastructure? I mean, it just doesn't make sense for us to be, you know, the kind of, I mean, we need to worry about their privacy. We need to worry about getting stuff out there and FERPA and stuff like that. But when you externally host it and you don't worry about putting it in your LDAP, you actually sidestep all those questions. Because it's not linked to their personal information. It's not linked to their Social Security unless they publish it. So, you know, it's another way of making, I think of it as a transitional point between the moment at which we're still thinking about hosting all this and doing it ourselves and the moment at which they're going to come in with their own hosting service, with their own space, and they can just be like, okay, where do I put my RSS feed?
And it's a huge difference. It's a huge difference in the quality of the work that you see from the students. I mean, that's what the faculty are telling us. This, you know, when that stuff is theirs, and they're building the site, and they're putting it out there, and it's not just this one-on-one interaction. Here's my paper, and I get my paper back. The dividends for what the kind of quality of work that's coming back to the faculty. Any other questions? Well, thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.